Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FoxBet. NFL Week 10. The topic on the docket for today. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only Payne Insider.
I can't believe it's week 10 already.
Time flies when you're having fun, or what, something to that extent?
There you go. Something like that.
No black cats around.
It's been a grind.
No black cats around these parts, Payne. No black
someone
cats.
Some would disagree. Some would disagree.
Well, I think a lot of our listeners might feel the same way, given how that Tampa Bay Seattle game came to an unfortunate finish. I know you and I went back and forth about Bruce Arians going for two, not going for two, the sequence of events. But we put all of those things in the past. And I want to start with a positive before we get into the five big games on the podcast today. We have another weekly winner in the 5K football free roll that deserves his or her accolades.
At Bonkbull. Don't know the guy's name, but he is the winner of the NFL Week 9 contest. And he had fortune on his side because it required the tiebreaker, and that Monday Night Football scoop and score is what determined the winner this week. So Bonk Bowl with the big win, thanks to the scoop and score late in the Dallas Giants game.
Like we say all the time, the gambling gods, they are a fickle lot, but you never apologize for a win when you get a fortuitous bounce. So congratulations to Bonk Bowl. We'll obviously be in touch, and you will have your Bet the Board swag pack headed your direction. Payne, when we look at the NFL card this weekend, there's clearly a team not really playing with swag. Their quarterback busy adjusting his facial hair before the game, in the middle of the game, after the game. Players are changing cleats at halftime. They're worried about watches. That, of course, being the Cleveland Browns, who are a field goal favorite as they welcome in the Buffalo Bills. Total on the game, 40 at FoxBet. Can Freddie Kitchens go back in time and rediscover that magic offensive touch that had you and I lauding everything he did last season from weeks 9 to 17?
I would say there's potential for that, yeah. Let's start here.
That didn't sound convincing.
I think you have to.
You want to try again? That didn't sound convincing.
I think you have to, you know, wonder where some of that creativeness is and where it's gone. You know, where's all the pre-snap motion? Where is the ingenuity that we saw last season with running backs, catching screens, receivers running the ball, right? Just there's so much pre-snap motion. And I think if you go back to the summer, when there were rumors leaking out of Cleveland that Monken and Kitchens were, you know, on two different pages, and that Kitchens wanted Monken to kind of take over the offense, even though Kitchens was going to be still calling the plays. But at some point, Baker wasn't responding, so Kitchens had to implement himself more into the fold. You remember that whole situation that was going down this offseason? We talked about it. It was in like September-ish. No, it was actually early August. And so, like, to me, Kitchens has to take a stronghold of the offense. We know he's calling the plays, but he needs to really implement some of his thoughts and ideas because there's just way too many three wide receiver sets, which is the Monken staple of offense. It always has been, right? There was just way more 12 personnel last year when Freddie was running the offense. It was just like one massive adjustment that he made when he took over for Hugh was just, you know, these big packages, these bulk formations. And I get it when you look at, right, like the Joes on your roster and you say, hey, do I want a third wide receiver on the field in Antonio Callaway or Higgins, or do I want my fourth string tight end on the field? Right? Mentally, you're like, this is tough to kind of say, hey, I want the fourth string tight end, but there needs to be a greater focus on the X's and O's and not the Jimmys and Joes. And my understanding is, and it's something I think we broached heading into the San Francisco game on Monday night weeks and weeks ago. And I don't know why it would take this long, but I am hearing that the offense could start having more Freddie Kitchens elements in it the rest of the way as opposed to Monken's principles. Let's see if that starts this week.
You would hope that Rashad Higgins could get himself on track. Just three catches this season after kind of what we thought was going to be a breakout campaign a year ago. But I know when you look at this Browns offense, naturally when things don't go the way that they're supposed to, the quarterback draws a ton of criticism. And I think it's worth talking about Baker Mayfield and how he'll match up with that Buffalo defense. When you look at Baker, he's the only quarterback in the league this season, Payne, with more interceptions than touchdowns when not pressured. Six touchdowns, 10 picks. Lowest passer rating of 75 when not under pressure. Last among qualifying quarterbacks in completion percentage and touchdown interception ratio. Felt like a much different Baker Mayfield when we saw him in the press conference on Wednesday. Maybe that's humility. Maybe that's something else that he can build on going forward. But when you look at Baker's struggles, and we know about all the big weapons, they'll get another one back in the fold this weekend in Kareem Hunt. How much responsibility should he draw onto his own shoulders for the way that this Browns offense has underachieved thus far?
Yeah, he's regressed a little bit. And I think to your point about his passer rating under pressure, sure. But when you're in second and 15 and third and 15 and defenses are playing a rushing four and dropping seven, that's partly the reason why the passer rating has dipped. You know, in a game like this, I think if you pay close enough attention, coaches and organizations will kind of clue you in on what they think of their own team with certain moves they make. And I think that's important with this matchup, right? Because Sean McDermott went out this week and he signed a defensive tackle, Corey Leggett. And it kind of meshes with what the metrics are saying in terms of the Buffalo defense and its glaring weakness, and that's stopping the run. You have Kyle Williams retire in the offseason. You lose Harrison Phillips, and Buffalo's run defense has become an absolute sieve, right? 30th in defensive rush efficiency, 30th in explosive run defense, and that is against the second easiest schedule of run offenses. The last 3 weeks alone, Todd, Buffalo has allowed 422 rushing yards on inside zone runs alone. So now it's not just Nick Chubb, but the man you mentioned as well, Kareem Hunt, he returns. And from what I am hearing, Freddie Kitchens has said he's definitely going to have a role in the offense. So I think that's a positive for Baker. Help him get going with a complimentary ground game. I could be overly optimistic because that's just kind of the man I am. But
stop.
It feels like, I hate to be the feels like guy. It feels like the Browns offense is ready to take a little bit of a step, right? I know they lost last week at Denver, just 19 points. Seven trips inside the Denver 28-yard line last week. They just couldn't finish drives. But they were moving the ball competently, right? If Cleveland gets the ground game going, you can use more play action. And that's actually where Baker's been at his best. Completion percentage rises 14%. Passer rating is 18 points higher. You can work more from the two tight end sets to help with protection. Just, you know, limit the freaking offensive penalties. I was looking at that this morning. 38 total offensive penalties in eight games. 18 of them pre-snap. So, again, back to your point about Baker being poor when he's not pressured. His job is just way more difficult because right now it's just second and long, third and long. He's been faced with the most second and third and 15 situations of any quarterback in the NFL. But to me, it's not one thing that's the issue here, right? It's just like a series of these elements adding up. The receiving group, you would think great route runners. You know, you pair Landry with OBJ. This could be an elite unit. You mentioned Rashard Higgins not really taking that leap we thought he would make. Next Gen Stats says Cleveland pass catchers creating 42% less separation this year than last. So that's another issue, I think, as well.
That's because they're weighed down by $350,000 watches and fancy cleats.
That watch one, that one wasn't the $350,000 watch. I'm a little embarrassed for OBJ. If you're going to floss with a watch like that, don't have it the cheapest Richard Mille watch in the bunch. Anyways.
What When we break the rest of this game down, obviously Cleveland's defense has been susceptible to the ground game as well. I mean, they've given up almost as many rushing yards as bottom feeders Miami and Cincinnati. Clearly, Buffalo's offense is built around the ground game. It looks like Devin Singletary finally emerging as their starting running back. Frank Gore, we knew it was just a matter of time before he was going to pass the baton to the rookie. What do we make of that side of the ball and Josh Allen's ability to lead the offense against a Cleveland defense that hasn't lived up to its side of the bargain either, who might get the services Demarius Randle back in the secondary to boot?
Yeah, and I think you probably led us in the right direction, and that's with Devin Singletary. I think he sees an increased workload, right? Not just because he's far and away the best Bills running back on the roster, but I think matchup-wise too. It's just smart, right? Cleveland's vulnerable against the run. We've kind of pointed this out for months now. The problem hasn't been rectified. 21st in defensive rush efficiency, 28th in explosive run defense. The two big dogs in the middle of the Browns defense, they're playing horribly. Larry Ogunjobi having his worst year as a pro. Sheldon Richardson having his worst year as a pro. I did have a chance to parse through some of Singletary's metrics a little bit deeper last night. In games where Singletary is suited up for Buffalo, which is weeks 1, 2, 7, 8, and 9, Buffalo number one in the NFL in rushing success rate those weeks. So Cleveland's got to figure out a way to choke out Singletary, make Josh Allen beat them with his arm, limit Josh Allen's damage with his legs as well. When you look at what Buffalo's done through the air this season, they faced the second easiest schedule of pass defenses. They're 30th in passing efficiency. So it's very clear. Stop the ground game. Don't allow Josh Allen to beat you with his legs. Force him into being a passer, and that's going to go a long way, especially when you have a healthy secondary now. In games where Denzel Ward and Greedy Williams have both played together, Cleveland's only allowing 35% of passes to great successful. That's 11% better than league average. In games where neither of them have suited up together, that number balloons to 51% of passes grading successful against the Cleveland defense. So I think Josh Allen has his work cut out for him this week. Now, I was listening to his presser. I do like how he's handled himself the last few days. He's continued to say, hey, this is about Buffalo versus Cleveland, not Josh Allen versus Baker Mayfield, that, you know, this isn't a bigger game just because Cleveland passed on him. I'm sure there's some kind of added motivation here, right? Internally, if you're a human being with any type of dog in you. But I think this is going to be fun to see unfold. The other thing that's interesting here, and the total is coming down because they're supposed to be about 17 mile per hour steady winds with like 32 mile an hour gusts. But neither team has shown an ability to stop the run. And if you can't do that, it opens up a bunch of other things. But the other thing here is both of these coaches are familiar with each other. Both of these coaches know what each other's defenses want to do. So you can help out your own offense, right? Because Sean McDermott and Stephen Wilkes have spent 5 years in Carolina together working on the same side of the ball, on the defensive side of the ball together. So they know each other's defensive philosophies, their tendencies, how each other thinks. So that's going to be a little fun matchup with to watch that unfold, a little game within the game here.
Very interesting early kickoff. We'll see if Cleveland can finally get themselves back on track. The market would suggest, hey, look, Cleveland's still a much better team than they've currently performed to, despite that ugly record that they've compiled, actually just as bad as they were at this point a season ago, despite all of those newfangled weapons. When we look in the afternoon, Payne, Green Bay returns home. We'll see if they can bounce back from a disappointing performance last Sunday against the Los Angeles Chargers. This time in frigid weather at Lambeau Field. They're 5.5-point favorites at Fox Bet. Total on this game, 47, as they welcome in Kyle Allen and the Carolina Panthers. Kyle Allen no longer looking over his shoulder, worrying about his job security as the Panthers put Cam Newton on IR earlier this week. But we know when we talk about the Carolina Panthers, it doesn't start and stop with Kyle Allen. It does Christian McCaffrey. And you look at the way this Green Bay defense is trending, Christian McCaffrey should be licking his chops, poised for a big, big day.
Spot on. And I think when you just look at this specific matchup, there's three things that are just really vital for the Panthers to have success. And the obvious one is Christian McCaffrey, right? He's got to be a beast, both the ground game and receiving game. I think all signs point to CMC just like showing out here, because Green Bay's defense, dead last in line yards, dead last in rushing success rate allowed, 57% of runs of grade successful against Green Bay. They have now bypassed the Chiefs for that great honor, by the way. when you look at how Carolina executes its ground game directionally and the type of runs that it likes, it's exactly where the Packers are most vulnerable, right? When you look at CMC catching balls out of the backfield, we know that is one of his best attributes. The Packers have allowed the fifth most receptions to running backs. So it's a really good matchup there. I think the second important thing here is you have to protect Kyle Allen, especially his blind side. We've seen at times this season the pocket awareness isn't all the way there yet. He has improved in that area along with, you know, holding on to the football, and I think that's a key here. But you look at Green Bay, 32 combined pressures as a defense the last three games. Their ability to get to the quarterback has just dropped off a cliff the last month of the season. I think the other important thing to monitor here, and it's how Carolina attacks this Packers defense, you got to use play action. And I think for two reasons. Not only does it help Kyle Allen, right? His passer rating is 13 points higher with the play fake element. He's also thrown zero interceptions when using play action. But it's more about, and we talk about this, I think, ad nauseum on this show, the smartest coaches scheme and game plan for the opponent weaknesses. And if you look at the Packers defense, they're the worst defense in the NFL when play action's used against them. Their sack rate is non-existent when offenses use play action as well. Green Bay has one sack all season when opposing offenses use play action. So I think that's what we're looking for here. The Panthers should have success on the ground with CMC. Kyle Allen should be able to dump it off short to McCaffrey as well. When you do choose to throw it, use play action. I think the Panthers offense should have some success here.
When you look at the Packers, just to kind of put a bow on some of their struggles defensively over the past 6 weeks, the Packers defense ranks 31st in yards per play allowed, 30th in net passing yards per pass play, 30th in big completions, 23rd in points per game, 24th in sack percentage, and 26th on third down. Oh, how it has become a distant memory for those people that wanted to laud the Green Bay Packers defense the first couple weeks of the season when they shut down Mitchell Trubisky, which it appears a good high school team could do at this juncture in the campaign.
I have no idea what the Packers are, by the way. It's week 10, and I have no idea.
I mean, I think it's a team right now that looks like every Packer team that we've seen in recent memory. They got to go out there and outscore you, otherwise they're going to be in big trouble, which I guess, Payne, is a perfect segue into how the Panthers' defense will match up against the Green Bay offense. Clearly a Packers offense that took the week off, generating a grand total of 184 total yards last weekend in their loss, less than 55 in the first half. Now, the Packers' ground game been relatively non-existent in two out of their last three games. Is this the kind of opponent they can get on track against? I know you've talked about it until you're blue in the face, how the Panthers have been susceptible since losing Kawhan Short earlier this season.
Yeah, spot on. And it's been an issue. I believe once they lost the defensive tackle, the Panthers' run defense went from above average 14th in rushing success rate to 28th. So there has been that huge drop-off there. The difference, though, and let me kind of pose it this way. Do you want more touches for Christian McCaffrey or Kyle Allen throws? Do you want more Aaron Rodgers throws or runs from the Packers' offense? And when you put it that way, you'd probably prefer Green Bay to run more if you're Carolina, right? When Green Bay does pass, at least on paper, this will be their toughest test, right? You look at a combination of pass rush and coverage. The Panthers right now, third in defensive pass efficiency, top 10 in pressure rate as well. Now, you do have to monitor the James Bradberry hip issue. He claims he's fine. He did miss Wednesday's practice. I'm not quite worried yet, but again, we're keeping an eye on it. When you just think about how he's performed this season, a 52 passer rating when quarterbacks target him. That's the fourth best mark in all of the NFL. But I just don't know what Green Bay is right now. And that's kind of where I'm struggling with this game. I've never been in, you know, a guy in this market to overreact to a single game performance ever. And there's always going to be a stinker or two, I think, throughout the course of the season. You know, just like you're going to probably have a performance where you exceed expectation by a large margin. And I think there's probably some built-in excuse last week for Green Bay, which we touched on Monday with how they practiced, the days in which they practiced, how they traveled, a change in that kind of schedule. I'm just not as high on the Packers as most people. And I think regardless of the result that ends up happening this weekend, just think about what the market's telling us here. And the market isn't always correct, right? But what the market's telling you is Green Bay right now, week 10 of the season, is 1.5 points better on a neutral than Kyle Allen and the Panthers, okay? And so I just kind of started digging through every single performance of Green Bay, and it's a team that, again, is led by its offense. But you just break down some of these games, and you mentioned that week one performance. Season opener at Chicago. The Packers put up 3.5 yards per play. Week two, outgained by 2.1 yards per play in a home opener against the Vikings, who are significantly better when home and in a dome. Week three, the Broncos. They played keep away with you, right? They just couldn't convert in plus territory, but the Broncos were a net positive 8% in success rate. Week four, you host a Thursday night game where all the advantages are of the home team on a short week, and the Eagles come in and just beat you up box to wire. You do have the dominant performance against Dallas, and don't take anything away from that performance, but Dallas was in a little bit of a funk. They turned the ball over a bunch. Week six against the Lions requires a game-winning field goal, and I don't want to be this kind of guy, the officials guy, and blame everything, but there were multiple favorable calls there. But just think about that game for a second too, Todd. The largest bettors in the world take a primetime Monday night football game from a peak of Detroit plus 6.5 to a 3.2 close, right?
That's week massive. Seven. Yeah. Absolutely massive.
Week seven against the Raiders, and we were on that game. The Raiders outgained Green Bay at home. Difference is the two Oakland turnovers at the Packers' 1 yard line, and then there was a third red zone turnover. Derek Carr completely changes that game with the turnover right before half. It was a 14-point swing before half, plus Green Bay got it out of the break. And then you beat a Patty Mahomes-less Chiefs team after being basically spotted 14 to start the game. If you look at any and every metric and just treated this like a Japanese baseball game, it would have ended in a tie. You know, just like every single metric you could have, it was a dead even draw. And then you obviously have last week's performance. I don't know what Green Bay is, even though they're 7-2 and potentially could be 8-2 here.
So one last thing, and if you can't disclose this kind of information, I understand completely. When I look at the market, and you set up a perfect illustration of how the market looks at the Green Bay Packers, we hit the rewind button to Carolina's trip out to the Bay Area, where they were absolutely throttled by the San Francisco 49ers. That game opened in a very similar range. It was actually bet down, professionals coming in on Carolina, taking the points in that particular spot. Right now, San Francisco, Green Bay on a neutral field. How do you have that game power rating?
We are really high in the 49ers, obviously. And that metric or that number probably changes a little bit this week when Staley is returning, McGlinchey is returning, Juszczyk is returning. I would feel comfortable, and people are going to call me insane, I would feel comfortable on a neutral having San Francisco -3.
Okay. I kind of how I wanted to set it up. And we talk about market efficiency and how public perception still plays a massive role in NFL handicapping as much as any sport that's out there. I think it's good to kind of create a little bit of that perspective. So we'll see ultimately what happens. It is worth noting that Carolina will be out of their comfort zone playing in temperatures expected to be in the high 20s. So we'll see how a younger quarterback and Kyle Allen performs in that. We know Aaron Rodgers.
Small hands, too.
I'm not even going to take that anywhere. Given what was trending this morning when I logged on to Twitter, I'm not taking that small hands anywhere, and I think it's a perfect opportunity for me to get out of this one safe and unscathed. So let's go to the Steel City, where it's the Rams coming into this one off of a bye, a 3.5-point favorite at Fox Bet as they take on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Total in this game has been bet down from a peak of 45.5, now down to 45. The Rams, a limited sample size, 2-0 straight up and against the spread under Sean McVay coming in off a bye. When you look at McVay's track record, he's owned the AFC. His teams have scored an average of 32-plus points per game with an average winning margin of almost 2 touchdowns. The first coach since the AFL-NFL merger to start his career 10-0 against the other conference, which shows, hey, maybe a lack of familiarity has bode real well for him. A lot of people are saying, hey, the Rams are still going to be very relevant in the NFC. They have a chance to get back to the Super Bowl. Say that as you will. I'm not sure Payne wins against the Atlanta Falcons on the road and beating the Bengals in London makes me feel confident that suddenly the Rams had fixed all that ails them on the offensive side of the ball.
Totally agree. And I think you just have to gauge them as a different offense right now until there's some type of change in personnel, player upgrades. I think we just have to accept that you need to make adjustments, right? O-line has declined. Goff hasn't taken that next step forward. Gurley isn't the same dude. Brandon Cooks is obviously out this week. When you specifically look at this matchup, I think it comes down to the two things it always does in Rams games on the highway under their current configuration, right? And it's, can the gap between home Jared Goff and road Jared Goff kind of shrink to a minimal level? And can the Rams protect Jared Goff? And if they can't, can Goff handle pressure? One thing that we know by now, and it's been consistent for two seasons, the best part of this Pittsburgh defense is getting after the quarterback. And it's proving itself again. They can do it with just four. In total, though, Pittsburgh number two in pressure rate. And if you can get to the quarterback like they did last week, right, against an outstanding Colts offensive line, the Rams O-line probably is light work for you. Let's see if it pans out that way, right? The bigger, I think, point to pressure, and I've hinted at this for a while now, pressure's one thing. How does a quarterback handle it, right? Goff's being pressured on 39% of his dropbacks. It's 14% higher than it was a season ago, but he's only been sacked on 9% of his dropbacks. It's this massive dichotomy to being pressured 39%, only sacked 9%, and it's not because he's elusive, okay? Some would say that Goff does a great job getting rid of the ball and not losing yards. Others would say, Christ, right? He's not willing to hang in the pocket and deliver a throw while getting hit. I fall in the latter group, okay? So we need to see him willing to stand in the pocket and make some throws and help this offense out a little bit. Moving past, I think, the ability of the Steelers to get after the quarterback, and I think that's a key point, especially in 2019 with how offenses operate. I'm relatively lower on Pittsburgh as a unit, right? You just look against them, look at them against the run. Average to below average in a lot of metrics, stopping the run against a schedule of run offenses, that's ninth easiest. Maybe we see a rested Gurley in this like one game scenario where he looks really fresh. I know that Minkah Fitzpatrick has played a huge role in the improvement of this defense. I think it probably bears repeating how good he's been. Without Minkah, Pittsburgh was 30th in passing success rate defense. 57% of passes graded successful. That's 11% worse than league average. With Minkah, Pittsburgh's 4th in passing success rate defense. Only 39% of opponent throws have graded successful. 7% better than league average. You look at big playability. With Cooks out, are they going to be able to hit big plays, the Rams? With Minkah in as well, Pittsburgh was 26th in explosive pass defense, now second best. So this is going to have to be an offensive game plan where the Rams methodically move the ball down the field efficiently. A bunch of short passes. Don't allow Pittsburgh to get after Goff. See if Gurley can handle a little larger workload with a week off. And I think that's going to be the key here.
Pretty crazy when you think about some of those things and how much different an offense looks when you take that spacer away, this case being Brandon Cooks. We've seen the Philadelphia Eagles bogged down without DeSean Jackson. One last thing on the Rams offense. When you're trying to identify a defensive game plan and you're the Steelers, how do you go about trying to defend Cooper Kupp? Because we've seen Jared Goff really fall off a cliff when he can't lean on his security blanket there and Kupp gets neutralized as a weapon going downfield.
You don't defend him with a linebacker?
Don't tell that to Mike Tomlin.
which is certainly a scary proposition and kind of why I hinted at moving the ball methodically down the field through the air, getting the ball out quick. But that has to be the focal point. And I think we touched on this last season. Prior to Cooper Kupp going down with an injury, Goff to Kupp, minimum 50 passing attempts, had the best quarterback, wide receiver, passer rating combination. So it's certainly his security blanket. It's his go-to guy. He runs the most precise routes. He knows where he's going to be every step of the way. So you would hope that Butler has a defensive game plan that doesn't entail linebackers covering Cup. And what's really interesting here is with the addition of Minkah Fitzpatrick, think about why he was unhappy with the Dolphins. And it's because Brian Flores, a disciple of Bill Belichick, likes to be very versatile in his defense, likes to move guys around. Minkah wanted to be a free safety, playing deep. This is a game where Flores or Belichick would make Minkah a slot corner because he's really effective at doing that as well and removing Cup from this game. I don't know if he's going to be willing to do that. Let's see.
Yeah, you'd have to think Minkah then plays a role in taking away the Rams' tight ends, and the Rams, at this point, I mean, we've seen Gerald Everett have some big days, but I don't think if you're the Steelers, you really worry about the tight ends being the guys that are going to beat you. Could be wrong in that particular regard. On the other side of the ball, the Rams' defense, they've improved greatly this season against the run. Third in yards per carry allowed compared to where they were last year at dead last. A homecoming for Aaron Donald, a Pittsburgh native. You have to imagine he'll be fresh and fired up to try and take advantage of the big national stage being given to him. But when I look at this Steelers offense, Payne, they don't do anything right now with Mason Rudolph that wows you. Jalen Samuels caught about 97 balls coming out of the backfield last week. I honestly don't know what to expect week in, week out from the Steelers offense, but I guess they've kind of been a model of consistency because they've scored 20 plus points in 7 consecutive games, but haven't scored more than 27 in any of those games either.
Really poor Steelers offense right now. Let's just put it that way, right? And I know it's like a team, if you're a scoreboard watcher, they've managed to put some points on the board. Much of that to do with their defense, whether it's the aforementioned Minkah Fitzpatrick flipping the game on its head with potentially a 14-point swing pick six last week, or it's the Chargers game where the defense, you know, has a touchdown as well and turns the Chargers over a couple times and creates short fields. But right now, Pittsburgh's 28th in overall offensive efficiency. It's bottom third in the NFL in both passing and rushing efficiency. Mason Rudolph, to me, has just flat-out struggled here, right? If you just kind of parse out games where he's started only this year, Pittsburgh's been successful in 42% of their passes. There's only been 13 explosive passes in Rudolph's 5 starts, so it's a lot of dink and dunk. And so when you kind of think of that game plan here of short passing, sure, it could help against a Rams defense that's number one in disruption rate. When you look at the Rams and Aaron Donald, who will have a homecoming this weekend, 36% of dropbacks by opposing quarterbacks have ended in the Rams pressuring, hurrying, or sacking the opposing quarterback. So in a game like this, when you just look stylistically how the Steelers want to operate offensively and you look at the pressure the Rams can bring, you would think Rudolph is getting rid of the ball quickly, dumping it off. It's imperative that the Rams be good tacklers this week, because not only is that going to be what they need to do, but you just look at Pittsburgh's offense right now. 62% of the Steelers' receiving yards this season have come after the catch. It's far and away the highest rate in the NFL. So again, short passes for Pittsburgh. Probably the Rams wanting to send a lot of pressure is going to require a lot of these dump offs. They have to be fantastic tacklers. If they are, the Steelers' offense isn't going to do much.
That's 62% reminiscent of what Tua is doing at Alabama, where we know tackling is optional at the college game. You rarely see that in the National Football League.
Absolutely. And, you know, we talk about Mason Rudolph, aside from the obvious, right, that, you know, the quarterback position's important to gauge, Pittsburgh hasn't shown an ability to help him out in the ground game either, right? You look across the board, Steelers have faced the 4th easiest schedule of run defenses. They're 27th in rushing efficiency. Look at the Rams, 4th in the league in defensive run efficiency. They've had 2 weeks to prepare. Aaron Donald's coming home. I don't think there's going to be like this balanced attack from Pittsburgh's offense either. There is a small glimmer of hope, I guess, that James Conner did practice on Wednesday. It was in a limited role. The injury he's dealing with in the position he plays, it's probably not one where you're going to be able to go out there and you know find out that a limited practice is going to mean that you play, right? You're going to have to figure out if you can absorb contact. So running in shorts without pads, not taking hits on the shoulder doesn't tell us anything. I think the next 2 days are pretty important to figure out if Connor's going to play or not.
Sounds like you going for your morning runs on the beach. Shorts, no pads. Good, all set and ready to roll. Last thing on this game, I'll real quickly, Payne, before we move on to the primetime affairs. Number here, Rams opened as a 4-point favorite. We've seen it tick down to 3.5, even trending almost towards a juice 3. What do you make of that thus far?
I probably, as you start asking me these questions more and more, getting me to divulge the secret sauce. I probably should have our power ratings up a little bit here. Let me just pull this up so I'm not like speaking out of my ass completely. This is just kind of all
that's what we do around here. We make it up on the fly as we go. We try and fill an hour of content. And if we make our listeners smarter, great. If we don't, then, you know, hey, we just write it off.
By the way, I had to fib a little bit on the San Francisco thing now that I'm looking at this. Good grief. We like San Francisco. We would actually make that game 3.8 going back on a neutral against the Packers. I don't really like the Packers. What did you ask me about now here? Rams-Pittsburgh?
I didn't ask about your power rating. I just asked about what the market suggested as we've seen the Rams open as a four-point favorite.
Well, we talked on Monday. It was an open of four, and I kind of hinted that this line would come down, but I wouldn't totally be on board with the movement. And so I'm intrigued to see if this gets lower, what ends up happening. But we're looking at, what are we looking at? 1.5, 3, 1.5. I mean...
And there is a shop out there now, I should say. You usually reference it, but that's known to take. Very sophisticated action at minus three, minus $1.20 plus.
Yeah. You know, I'm intrigued to see what happens if this gets to three. Let's just kind of put it that way. Now, that matchup does scare me about Goff and pressure and all that good stuff. It does make me a little nervous backing the Rams. So,
as it should. Jared Goff on the road, West Coast softness against pressure. I mean, clearly not the recipe for what allow you to put your head on the pillow and sleep soundly at night. Well, no. what shouldn't allow anybody to sleep soundly at night has been this Vikings defense. And Minnesota goes on the road Sunday night to take on the Dallas Cowboys in prime time. You're looking at the Cowboys, a three-point favorite at Foxbet right now. Total in this game, a 48 pain. And the Cowboys won their last two divisional games by a grand total of 74-28. They have, however, struggled outside the NFC East to match that level of emotion this season. Now, primetime, a little bit different. And when you look at the Vikings, they're clearly going to have to work against a disturbing trend. Because the Vikings have now failed to win their last 14 games playing outdoors against teams with a winning record. You have to go back to week 17, 2015, when they beat the Green Bay Packers 20-13 to find the last time they were able to do so. It's Kirk Cousins. It's prime time. I'm not sure where we want to go if we want to talk about the Vikings offense against the Cowboys defense or look at Dallas's high-powered offense against a slumping Minnesota defense.
I'm not sure how I want to phrase this comeback, but let it be known that Todd and I are very close. And even though he's like 28 years older than me, I do have that little brother or that, you know, that big brother vibe towards him where I'm the only one that can pick on him. So let me say this. After saying everything you said, it's probably very positive that the Vikings are playing indoors this week.
That's you got to bring it up a little bit. I mean, technically, you know, there's an open roof and everything else that goes on there. You just have to throw it out there so people are aware of it.
When I look at the Vikings, they certainly have to get their ground game going this week. They were choked out against the Chiefs last week, and the offense just wasn't as good. Kirk Cousins, I thought, was still decent, but he needs a ground game. When you look at this matchup and the offensive line, it's clear that the Cowboys are probably going to put pressure on Kirk Cousins. He's got to be effective in that role because the Cowboys eighth in pressure rate. We also need to see the Vikings step up. They are going a little bit up in class here, right? Playing a Cowboys defense that we've kind of been ahead of the curve on, said, hey, hasn't been as good so far this season. That's still the case. Bottom third in the NFL in both rushing and passing success rate defense. But the Vikings have faced the fourth easiest schedule of opposing defenses. When this line first came out and it was a pre-opener of sorts, it was at 45.5, and I said, good God, give me the over. And then it reopened at 48, and now it doesn't look like Thielen's going to get out there and play, and I've cooled on the total a little bit. But I do think the Vikings are going to do pretty well here offensively, especially if they can keep Cousins upright. There's probably going to be plays to be had in the passing game. I think Cooks probably gets back on track here a little bit in the ground game. So I think the Vikings are going to have some success moving the ball here. I was looking at some of those numbers that you kind of mentioned. Kirk Cousins has not been good in primetime games. I believe it's like 8-21-1 against the spread. However, Sunday night games, 3-2. So a little bit different there. Don't have a ton on this game, but I think inevitably If this line were to continue to tick up, there would be a group of folks that would like to grab the hook on Minnesota here if it were to pop.
What's the general sentiment on the Vikings as far as your circles are concerned in terms of their ceiling or how this team should be viewed on a week in, week out basis?
Well, I think we saw the offense making leaps and strides, right? Kirk Cousins really started to play efficiently after the Chicago game. He heard all the whispers. Thielen not being out there certainly hinders what they can do offensively. What I am hearing from that situation is they would want him to be 100% healthy before bringing him back. I know there's video that surfaced on the 30th of him out there running routes, but the hamstring didn't look right. They do have a bye coming up. Some have kind of mentioned that, hey, they would love to bring him back after the bye. But if you drop a game here and go to 6-4, maybe there is a need to bring him back. But if you can get the offense playing at the rate it was prior to the Chiefs game, you like the way Minnesota's projecting moving forward. The problem is, and it's something we've identified, I think, before anybody, we did it in the offseason, we've kind of continued to hammer it home a little bit, the offense probably needs to continue being really good because the defensively for Minnesota, they have dropped off. I just can't figure out what's going on with Zimmer's defense, whether it's guys getting a little bit older, whether opposing teams really know what Zimmer wants to do defensively. There was this article that came out in the offseason where Zimmer was like, hey, I looked at some film, I self-scouted. It seems like offenses know what I want to do. They've really focused in on how we like to blitz. I love to, you know, blitz with my double A gap. And, you know, when running backs are in helping on protection, they're starting to cheat in before they even know what's going on. So I think that has something to do with it a little bit. Xavier Rhodes, my guy from Florida State, looks a step slow. He's always been a bigger physical corner. He's struggling with quickness. Everyone knows my feelings on Trey Waynes when he was drafted. Doesn't have the hips to turn, so he's limited. They're hoping Mike Hughes steps up in that role a little bit more as being a starter out wide. But you just look across the board for the Minnesota Vikings defense. They are 24th in both rushing and passing success rate defense. And one thing that you really want to start doing this time of year is it's a small sample size sport. These teams change week to week, month to month. You really want to start looking at trending metrics. And when you do that for the Vikings defense, the last 4 weeks, 28th in the NFL against the run, 28th against the pass, 32nd against the run. And I think what's even scarier about some of these numbers is they have faced the sixth easiest schedule of run offenses this season. So you would think Dallas is going to be able to come out here, establish Zeke, pick up the ground game. Right now, Dallas has the most efficient offense in the NFL. Number one. Now, they have played the softest schedule of defenses, so there's maybe a little noise in that number. But for the Vikings, the key here is, again, getting out early. We talked about this recently because it was Monday Night Football, Giants and Dallas. Make sure you stop the Cowboys' offense, limit them early in the game. In terms of success rate, the Cowboys' offense has been average in that first quarter, whether it's Kellen Moore and a lack of a script, whether it's the script that has Jason Garrett's fingerprints on it, whatever it is, it hasn't been better than average early on in the first quarter of games. Past that, it looks like Kellen Moore has been able to really adjust because most efficient passing offense, most explosive passing offense, from quarters two and beyond for the Dallas offense. So very vital that the Vikings get out early in this game.
Should be a good game. Two teams obviously vying for playoff seeding in the NFC. We know that picture isn't going to get any clearer with just a couple of data points there. But as someone who has a ticket along with a lot of our listeners paying for Philadelphia to win the NFC East, should we not be backing the Cowboys come Sunday night? I'd have no problem with Dallas losing that particular football game.
Not at all.
I'm
so pissed, by the way, that, and I know Howie doesn't want to overspend, but he has been in negotiations with the Jets back-to-back trade deadlines to acquire Robbie Anderson. And maybe it was because there was this glimmer of hope that D-Jax would return. I was all in favor of having him have the surgery immediately, knowing that your goals as an organization was to win another Super Bowl and not be like competitive in week 9. But now that you don't have D-Jax and now that you didn't go out and acquire Robbie Anderson, It's going to make Carson Wentz's life a little bit easier. So, yes, we would not mind a Dallas loss here.
Time to just spread Miles Sanders out wide. Let him go downfield and make big plays. That's
yes.
That's what the Philadelphia Eagles need. Let's not kid ourselves. All right, from one primetime game on Sunday to the primetime game Thursday night, and it's the end of an era taking place in Oakland. And what do I mean there? Phillip Rivers will play his final game as a member of the Chargers in Oakland against the Raiders. And it's the Los Angeles Chargers, a one-point favorite at Foxbet, total on the game, 48.5. When you look at what Phillip Rivers has done in this particular building, he's won more games here than any opposing quarterback the Raiders have faced on their home turf, 9. Thrown the most touchdowns at 24 and thrown for a shade less than 3,500 yards. Kudos to the Raiders. It hasn't taken that long. A lot of people wrote them off this season, probably can put me in that same bucket as well. But they've already won as many games this year as they did all of last season, and we continue to see this team progress. But one area that they haven't progressed in pain is that secondary, and it's going to be tested tonight against the resurgent Chargers passing attack that looks to have a little bit more big play potential with a healthy Mike Williams, Hunter Henry, and of course, Keenan Allen.
Absolutely. And I think you probably want to wonder, or you're asking yourself, or you're hoping, if you're a Chargers fan, has the offense turned the corner a little bit, right? You got a new OC, you got a new play caller. He was fantastic in the opening game. But was it just the Packers defense continuing to be a mess? Maybe it's a little bit of both. Okay. Hunter Henry, as you alluded to, looks fully healthy right now. Left tackle Russell Okung is back. Melvin Gordon finally getting his feet back under him. Looks like he's a little bit in game shape now. Plus I like that it appeared the Chargers upped their pace finally last week. They went from, middle of the pack last week in first half pace, which is a huge jump up from their sloth-like self. So I think it's something to monitor here when you have a new OC offensively. Will the pace continue to increase? And I think that's probably beneficial to a Chargers offense. I really do. The thing that we have to see here is what's the follow-up performance for the new OC. And I'm not going to say his name because I'll butcher it. But this is going to tell us potentially how good he can be, right? He had his opening job interview last week. It was a fantastic performance. Now let's see, with a short week in travel, do you have an ability to not just do what worked last week, but attack the opponent's weakness? And that's moving the ball through the air, to your point, Todd, right? Oakland, 29th in defensive pass efficiency. They're dead last in explosive pass defense. And it's not like Oakland's played some like grueling schedule of offenses, right? Slightly above average, 15th toughest. So I think the Chargers are going to have the ability to move the ball through the air here pretty comfortably.
Yeah, and you mentioned Oakland, their struggles there. Only 7 takeaways this season for the defense. That the Falcons, Dolphins, the only 2 teams in the league that have fewer. They've applied 29 quarterback hits. The Bengals are the only team that have supplied less, and losing Arden Key on that pass rush, a player who looked to be rounding into form, won't help that cause whatsoever. To the Chargers' credit, they did start to see a little bit of a burst from Melvin Gordon, his best game since returning from that prolonged holdout early in the season.
I'm surprised Brian Flores hasn't contacted you to play DB for the Dolphins. I promise you, he started like 27 different corners this season. It's crazy.
He's trying to figure out exactly what you guys have there in terms of the franchise. He put the franchise cornerback on the shelf.
Fitzmagic's been really good the last month.
Fitzmagic does what Fitzmagic does. He gets you to the window. He's not going to cover as a favorite, but as an underdog, he's a guy that you can trust with your bankroll. And the Dolphins quietly remain one of the more undervalued assets in the National Football League. Part of the reason we've seen him bet down 6 points against the Colts this week.
Are you foreshadowing?
I'm not foreshadowing much of anything.
The confidence just immediately escaped you.
No, there's nothing. I mean, I'm not going to the window with a ticket on the Dolphins. Let's not kid ourselves. When you look at the other side of the ball for the Thursday night game, the Oakland Raiders have really figured out an offensive identity. And a lot of that is a controlled passing game with Derek Carr, who leads the league in completion percentage. But so much of that has been predicated on the emergence of rookie running back Josh Jacobs, who leads all rookies in carries, yards, and touchdowns. Actually passed Marcus Allen last week amongst Raiders rookies for productivity. The Raiders are trying to incorporate more in the passing game. Having Tyrell Williams healthy is a big boost. Zay Jones out there for 92% of the offensive snaps versus the Lions. You wouldn't know it by his catch count, but it takes a little while. We've seen Hunter Renfrow look better. I give you all of that to ask you this, Payne. The Raiders offense against the Chargers defense, who's got the edge?
Well, right off the bat, I think we have to mention this, that offensively for Oakland, both their starting center, Rodney Hudson, and right tackle, Trent Brown, who they acquired for massive loads of money in the offseason, have not recorded a full practice yet this week. Both are questionable, so we have to monitor that from the time you listen to this, probably around noon Eastern, right up until kickoff. And, you know, with Melvin Ingram back paired with Joey Bosa, we saw the Chargers got gobs of pressure last week without having to send a lot of guys. So much so that Aaron Rodgers kept mentioning the barrage of pressure he was under in this postgame presser. It was like he was still shell-shocked. I'm intrigued to see if the Chargers defense can replicate what they did last week, because to me it was an anomaly performance, right? And I get it. The Chargers defense has been really banged up. That's why they haven't performed very well, yada, yada, yada. But when I really dug in to this Chargers defense, five of the last six offenses the Chargers defense has faced, Dolphins, Broncos, Steelers with Hodges, the Titans, and the Bears, right?
Duck! Duck and Trubisky! How dare you not call that a murderer's row?
And, you know, you look in total, the Los Angeles Chargers defense has faced the sixth easiest schedule of opposing offenses. So this is going to be a massive step up in class. And one thing that we've kind of talked about, and it's good for you with them heading your way, Gruden looks like he has not lost a step with his X's and O's. And we knew he was going to put in the time because he loves this stuff. He's always going to have an elite game plan. It's just like, hey, keep your hands off the merchandise, so to speak. Let other guys find you talent. Let other guys help you acquire players, draft players, things of that nature. You just worry about the offense. And right now, you look at Oakland, fifth most efficient offense in the NFL. Gruden has them humming. They've played the eighth toughest schedule of opposing defenses. So the exact opposite of what the Chargers defense has done. You can attack the Chargers just about anywhere, but whether it's through the air, whether it's on the ground, and we've seen that Oakland does have the ability now with Jacobs to be extremely balanced. But it is something, again, to monitor with those two offensive linemen. I know Derek Carr has been fantastic under pressure, has a 109 rating under pressure. Only Russell Wilson has been better this season, but he has only been pressured on 25% of his dropbacks. That would surely increase if those two guys are out. And we've seen in previous seasons where he's been called into question about treating the ball like a hot potato when pressured. So we don't want to see glimpses of that again if you are an Oakland backer, if you're an over backer. So, again, let's monitor the situation on the two O-linemen. If they go, I don't see how the Raiders don't score virtually every possession here.
Well, the offense has been good, and you can make the case that Oakland is a couple players away from being much more relevant in the AFC playoff picture, probably a couple of years ahead of schedule. We'll see if they can address the need for a pass rusher this offseason and a couple other spots. But clearly a lot more optimism around the silver and black after eight games now than what any of us had coming into the season. When you look at that grueling travel schedule, you looked at the Antonio Brown distraction. So I think John Gruden deserves serious praise and is worthy of all of it for what he's been able to accomplish with this particular team so far.
Yes, and he was attempting to go out and fix the pass rush issue, but it's just so difficult to do that. It costs a lot to get a premier pass rusher, so he wasn't able to do that. He was trying to fix the linebacker unit. Didn't really do that either, but Arden Key is out again tonight, so another pass rusher that Oakland will be without. And one thing with this game that we've seen so far, the total from a very respected group has been hit over at 47 minus 15. 47 is a key number. So we're now out to 49. Certainly could go over that number when you look at this matchup. But the series has really trended under, and I just have a thing about missing numbers. So I haven't bet this game yet. But at 47 minus 15, very sharp over money.
Yeah, you mentioned it. The last four games have all come in under the total. The Chargers, we talk about them until we're exhausted and ad nauseum. My God, I can't even put together words. 14-5 against the spread the last nine road games. They've actually covered six of the last seven against the Oakland Raiders as well. So we'll see what happens tonight. A de facto elimination game in the AFC West for these two teams that are vying for a wild card spot in the AFC. And as you mentioned, that total pain appears 49, 49 and a half, kind of the point day resistance, as we've seen some under money come in, total snapping back to 48 and a half in some locations. Five big games all broken down for you, better than anybody in the business is going to do. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. You can follow me there as well.
Shots at fired.
At Todd Furman. And of course, the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. We don't fire shots. We just speak truths here on the Bet the Board podcast. That's how we do things. And as always, the best bet for the weekend is brought to you courtesy of FoxBet, where the biggest name in sports is now the hottest name in sports betting and one of the fastest growing betting apps out there. Whatever sports you like betting on, FoxBet will have you covered. You can download the app from anywhere to your smartphone and place real money wagers on dozens of sporting events with the easy-to-use app in both New Jersey and Pennsylvania. FoxBet, make the call. Download the app today. Mr. Payne, where are we going to make ourselves gobs and gobs of cash this weekend?
Let's go with a total this week. And because there's a hook, we won't be able to push. So it's either going to be a win or a loss. We broke this game down a bunch already. And it's the Rams in Pittsburgh. Let's kind of go back to the well, what we're known for, the first half under in the Rams in Pittsburgh. 21 and a half or better as we speak now. There is some 22 and a half out there, but it's not really an impactful number. But obviously, if you can get it at normal juice, the better end of the number is always better. But we'll call it 21 and a half for grading purposes under in the first half of Rams-Pittsburgh. So when you don't have Brandon Cooks, as Scott and I mentioned, there's not that explosive element here to the Rams offense at this point. If you look at trends in how both these defenses have played the last 4 weeks, both top 10 across the board in success rate on the ground and through the air. So both defenses have really taken that step up. The fear you would have here is McVay with 2 weeks to prepare, but I think that's alleviated just a little bit by the ability that Pittsburgh has, Todd, to get after the quarterback. And then I think when it comes to Pittsburgh's offense, it's going to be a lot of short passing, which is good, right? Complete a 4-yard pass, complete a 3-yard pass, keep the clock ticking, just tackle. And again, Pittsburgh's offense hasn't shown an ability with Mason Rudolph to be explosive. 13 explosive passes in 5 games. So there's not a lot of, at least on paper, right? And that's what we have to go by right now. On paper, there's not a lot of explosiveness to where you would potentially get that thing that distorts a first half total. A lot of methodical drives. We get them to end in 3, we'll be cashing here.
Avoid the big costly turnovers,
yep.
Avoid the special teams miscues, and I think we're comfortably able to get to the window in a game in the national spotlight Sunday afternoon. Steelers-Rams, first half under, official price release, 21.5. Payne, any other final words of wisdom, life advice, things you'd like to share before we head into the weekend?
No, that's about it. And just one last little nugget there. Pittsburgh, first half pace, 31st in the NFL, trend-wise, 29th. On the season. The Rams are a little bit faster in the first half, but they're trending towards being just slightly above average in first half pace. So two things to note there as well. That's it.
Run
Let's get
the
out
damn
of Dodge.
Ball. Run the damn ball, Sean McVay. Run the damn ball. Give Todd Gurley his 25 carries. Let him average 2.7 yards per carry. And I think it'll put us all in a very good place.
Put Minka in the slot too. Have him shadow Cooper. No, it's not. I was actually looking at this just to not... We discussed it in the breakdown, but just to be factual from this perspective, Minka Fitzpatrick was used at free safety with the Dolphins on 27% of snaps. That's increased to 85% for Pittsburgh. So it'll be interesting to see if they ask him if he will move back to the slot for this one game and focus on Cooper Kupp. If they do that, I really like this total.
For Payne Insider, you can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. You can also follow the podcast. And most importantly, you should be following the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Steelers Rams, first half under 21.5. Come Sunday afternoon, we'll see you at the window.